I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Amazing FBA with your host, Michael Veazey. I am talking today of Stephen Summers from Marketplace Superheroes. Marketplace Superheroes teach people how to build a global business using private label on Amazon, but they also provide some key services for sellers like global freights, translations, photography, and unlike everyone else, is in-house, which includes freight, which is a really difficult and expensive thing to build. So we may not get to talk about that today, but Stephen, you mentioned something which had my mouth watering. This shows what a nerd I've become, that you talked about a percentage of winners that you get with your private label products. And you said something like 6 to 7 out of 10 are successful. And then out of the other three, we broke it down a bit. That to me sounds like an amazing hit rate for private labels. So tell me more about how on earth you're achieving that.
Yeah, well, first of all, obviously, like disclaimer alert, but basically the only disclaimer here is like, when I say a product works, what I mean is that it can double its original investment in 6 to 9 months. That's number one. So then the other thing will be that, you know, you might, and this is the problem, right, with the Amazon market, like, right, because people will say, well, how many units would that be or blah, blah, blah. Look, it all depends. Like, I mean, it's so hard. Like, we've lots of different products we sell. We've had even products, Michael, that like literally make one sale every 3 or 4 days that I would consider a winner because the product is like £120 in the UK, for example, and makes like 40 pounds-ish net profit, you know, whenever we sell it. So that's just the first thing to mention. I would consider a product that works like that. So then our process, like, I mean, I won't be able to do it all today, obviously, but I will give a good overview for everybody listening. So like the first thing is we've called BEST products, best products. What are they? Number one, they're boring. Number two, they're established. So they've been selling for a long period of time. We're not selling fidget spinners, for example. Three, sustainable. They're going to continue to sell based on the fact that they're already established. So fidget spinner would not be sustainable. You can look at the Google Trends graph of the last 5 years on that and get a good laugh. It literally goes up and then down within 2 minutes, blink of an eye. And then T is tangible. So we're very big on the, obviously our main product is tangible, but if we do a bonus item that comes with our main product, it's always tangible. We don't do eBooks. We don't do anything like that. We don't do any downloads or anything. It's always a tangible, real product. So that's a few rules everyone can think about. So I'll talk about Amazon.com just for now. It's probably where a lot of people will be researching in general, even though you might be in Europe to get ideas and stuff like that, because the catalog is so much bigger. But what we do is, first of all, like, we pick a category, obviously. So it could be home and garden. Again, it's called home and kitchen. And then it's called God knows what by now by Amazon. They keep changing the names. We start there in a category. And then what we do is we look at the top 100 products. Now, before anybody panics, no, we typically will never sell any of those products. They're just to get us started. So we look at those and then we click into those products. We typically only click into products that are, they don't have item specifics to avoid in them. So like they're not hazardous, they're not breakable, they're not, don't have sharp edges, all that kind of stuff. We've got 15 different things that we look at there. They're simple though. But again, I've sold items that have become hazardous. So, you know, they're simple, but they're very important. So we look at that first, we click into those items and we do see like, okay, well, let's look at the generic key term for the products that we're clicking into. So again, let's just say it's plastic shoeboxes. So that's the generic word that people would type into Amazon to find that particular type of product. So we search that on Amazon.com in another tab and then we look for what number of results have has Amazon returned. So when you search something, Amazon will say one out of 2,000 results, right? Typically, we like to have products that are sub 1,000 results. But in some cases, we'll go for 2,000. It'll depend on the next step, which I'll describe. So then what we do is the next filter we run it through is we go, okay, so it's 723 results. Okay, it's less than 1,000. That looks interesting. Then we have a tool called, it's called DS, Amazon Quick View, it's called. And basically what that is, it's a tool that will show you the BSRs of products on Amazon as you're just scrolling down the page. A lot of people use different ones. So we look at that and we started to get a sense of the size of the market. And how we do that is we say, what BSRs are the products on the first page? So we would consider products that are sub 30,000 in Amazon.com, actually. And a lot of people might think that's very high, like, wow, 30,000. But you kind of have to think about it and say there's hundreds of millions of items on sale on Amazon. Now, something is 30,000 or less bestseller rank, you know, it's doing pretty well, you know. And again, there's lots of tools out there which we actually don't utilize that estimate daily sales volume and all that. But that's a road to nowhere, we typically found, simply because, you know, it's anecdotal data. Amazon don't actually release their sales figures daily, so it's constantly changing. So we don't really look at that too much. We want to get real market data when we bring the product in. Anyway, we're running this filter, and if we start to see like every product on that page that is in fact a plastic shoebox, if that's like 150 BSR, 500, we start to get very nervous very quickly because the market is very, very big. And you might say, Steve, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And if the results were low, but those BSRs were also very low, that's exciting because that's telling us there's not that many options on Amazon right now. And these are selling a lot. So that's a good thing. However, if there was less than 1,000 results, right? But then all the BSRs were like 200,000, 70,000, 40,000, then it's not that interesting. Now, I can't really give like exact specifics because, you know, it's hard to do that. It's hard to say it's black or white. But if I was looking at it and I'm seeing products that are like 1,200 BSR, I'm seeing some are 5,000, some are 23,000, some are 6,000. That means, you know, I'm reading into that and I'm saying it's a relatively big market, but it's not humongous. And the search results are relatively low. So I'm starting to say that looks interesting. That looks like it could be a potential tick. Now, you will typically find that the products in the top 100, none of them qualify with these rules, but you can definitely check. But what we usually do is then we start to go into subcategories, subcategories, and look through them with the same kind of process I just talked about. And also what we do is we look at items that are related to the products we're looking at that didn't qualify necessarily. What other items are they talking about? And we start, so if it was plastic shoebox, we'd start going like, you know, sponsored and whatever. And, you know, customers also bought these items or also viewed these items. And we start trying to see what are items that aren't plastic shoeboxes and can we start running them through that filter? And we do that. And really then, you know, as you go into the subcategories and subcategories, you start to find more of these, what we would call hidden gem products. So a lot of people might be listening and saying, that sounds like it's going to take a lot of time. It does take time, absolutely. But when we start running those filters, what we're doing is we're seeing products that are in demand, people are buying them. But what we're seeing is when we put in a relatively generic, what we call a short tail keyword, we're seeing like, well, the results are pretty interesting. And the competition that's out there, the BSRs, the offers they're making, it looks like we can get into that market. The offers aren't that great. The listings aren't that great. You know, they only have one image. They don't have a great title. And you start to see a lot of opportunity there. Now, our research training is 3-4 hours, right, of to get it all in, right? But that's like a very kind of high-level overview that I would say is relatively accurate, that people can kind of gauge some rules. So the rules, again, remember, where BSR 30,000 or less is relatively interesting for us. We look for less than 1,000 search results when we type in a generic keyword. These are some of the basic rules we look at.
Okay, so I guess a lot of the time, whatever system we use, you're looking for demand, obviously, and a gap between supply and demand, I suppose. The other thing you're implying, I guess, is manageable competition. In other words, so if you're getting into, when you say too big, let's define this a bit more. So if somebody has, if a product has 100 BSR, that means, just to clarify if anyone is new to this, BSR is bestseller rank. And if something has 100 bestseller rank in, say, toys and games, it means it's the 100th best-selling toy and or game within that overall category, right, in Amazon. So roughly, what would you, to put some figures on it for people who are outside the Amazon bubble, what sort of revenue approximately would you put on, or give us some kind of flavor of something like that?
I wouldn't even go revenue. I would say it's too hard. Like it's all different, right? Because toys and games market is much bigger than another one is much bigger. It's hard. Like, I mean, I go where we go, we would say, well, it's in range. And if something is, say, let's say it's 30,000, let's say it's, I'm going to pick a really random one, but I'm going to give you a rough, because this is not even going to be accurate, but I'm going to give people a rough idea. If something was 10,000, let's just say in like toys and games, for example, that's probably selling about 10, 15 a day, something like that, maybe more.
So that puts in context that if something is like 1,000 in toys and games, it is maybe selling 100, 200 a day or something.
You're selling hundreds even, you know, depending on the, probably 100 actually, that's about right. Yeah.
Something like that. Who knows? I mean, the 80-20 rule seems to apply to that like so much else in life. But yeah, I mean, the point being, it's a lot anyway. Yeah.
I mean, because when you go, so the difference between 100,000 and 200,000 PSR is minor, right? The difference between 10,000 and 30,000 is a lot bigger. The difference between 1,000 and 10,000 is bigger again. And the difference between 100 and 1,000 is like monumental.
Yes, I mean,
we've sold products that were wholesale items, right? That would have been, you know, we had one, I remember we used to be able to get, it was number two in like consumer electronics accessories on Amazon in UK, actually back in the day. And that thing was selling like, I can't even remember, but it was hundreds and hundreds a day. It was this little satellite freesat box we used to sell. We used to get from a company called Lab Gear. It was unbelievable. And again, we actually did the numbers on it one day and we realized we're making like 20 pence whenever we sell this thing. So it's just not worth doing. But you know, the volume at the top is incredible. Now, if you saw something though, right, had like 100 results on Amazon, for example, and you saw there was one product at 100 BSR, that's like an unbelievable opportunity. But you know, those are like, you know, the outliers. Those are like the million to one shots, right? Whereas what I'm talking about is a much more sensible way of looking at things. And, you know, to be clear, like what we consider a good product is one, like I said at the top, it does, sells out 6 to 9 months. But also, if that's doing like, I would say if that's doing in a continent, you know, $1,000 or £1,000, let's just say a month in revenue or profit, I would say it's a relatively interesting product, because if it's doing £1,000 a month, let's just say, right, in Europe as a whole, right, all the countries doing £1,000, that's very low. It's £30 a day revenue, right? So when you divide it down, it becomes very small. It's still making you £300. And you might be like, ah, it's not that much. But again, like if you have 10 products bringing in £300, it's net profit before tax, 3,000. You know, so like it is a numbers game. And I would much prefer to have a business that has, you know, 100 to 200 SKUs over time that are selling $1,000 or pounds a month than I would a business that has two SKUs and is doing the same kind of figure. Because the more, and this has happened to a lot of Amazon sellers, you know, they talk about all the changes in Amazon and all these things. And we just find, because we're not selling hyper competitive items like that, we just don't feel those changes as much. Like we follow Amazon's terms of service when we're listing a product. We don't do, you know, the ransom note, all bullets and then small, or all caps and small caps and all that nonsense. So we don't do any of that. And again, I'm not saying it doesn't work. It does. But again, there's going to be a day of reckoning when Amazon decide, you know, they no longer want that and just wipe all that out, I'm sure. So we typically just, we try to follow Amazon's guidelines for those kinds of things. And because we're selling like just lower competition products, we get conversions, by the way, people wouldn't believe, you know, but I've seen products that are doing 60% conversion rates, which again is, people would say it's impossible, but it's not really impossible when there's not that much competition. It's a simple product. People have proven that they buy it. It doesn't have any massive fitting issues or fitment issues. It's not something that people have to like consider forever because it's a somewhat impulse purchase. So, you know, we've seen those many, many times. We've even seen like a, what was it? It was like a hunting mount. So, you know, a mount for like if you are hunting and you want to put like a moose's head on it or whatever, which again, I don't condone animal violence at all. I don't. But I've seen a member, a 60% conversion rate and something like that, doing, you know, $5,000 a month in revenue, $1,500 a month in net profit. I see it.
I love the randomness of the internet. You just can't you can't make that up, right? A moose's head that's converting at 60% or moose's head amount, I should say.
Yeah, you won't believe this, right? But we do these kind of funny videos on our YouTube channel from time to time. And we had one, right? And it was bacon bandages, okay? Look like bacon and they smell like bacon and they're bandages. And I was like, oh man, like this is ridiculous. But we use merchant words to get a rough estimate of search volume. It's not particularly accurate, but it gives us a feeling of search volume. So we kind of look at it just to see what it looks like. And bacon bandages, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think it was like 15,000 people a month or something stupid, or 7,000 people a month, something like that. We're searching the keyword bacon bandages on Amazon, which blew my mind. But like that's, as you said, yeah, the randomness of the internet, it's there, but also it's undeniable because they make sales. So like, it's really a case of, you know, we mentioned something off air, like, you know, selling supplements or something like that, right? I mean, yeah, you can make a lot of money. Like you can make outrageous money selling supplements, but everyone's competing with you. And so when everyone's competing with you, if you're using Amazon sponsored products, the PPC platform on Amazon, for anybody, pay-per-click platform advertising, anybody who's not sure what that means, like it's an auction. So there's space there and you have to bid against other people for that space. So obviously if you're in a hyper-competitive market, the cost per click, CPC, is going to be incredibly expensive because it's an auction. Makes sense, right? There's only so much space that Amazon can provide. Whereas if you're selling, we have another member that sells, and this is not a $1 million product. It's like the covers underneath the feet of a washing machine, right? To stop it from scratching the ground. Like he's making money selling that. Okay, he's not making a fortune selling that, but he's making money every single month, profit. No one's really that interested in that item. So again, I would not recommend buying that item. I'm just saying for anybody listening. But that's just an example, again, of the types of things we're talking about. We're not talking about supplements. We're not talking about, you know, different skin creams and all that, which, by the way, my friend Ryan, which I've done an interview with him before, Ryan is a very successful entrepreneur. He's from the US, but he lives here in Ireland, actually. And they have like a hair replacement company called Pro Hair Labs. And like, they'll tell you, like, I mean, their volume on Amazon is really high. But again, they had to build this massive brand off of Amazon to begin with. And they leveraged Amazon. They were able to scale over there very, very successfully. So again, like, that's the other game. That's the brand game. And I would say, I always make clear the kinds of items that we're talking about, they're what we call marketplace items. It's almost like a stock market, Michael. You can really think about it, right? Whereas like when you're doing the brand game, you're in a different game. Amazon is just one of your distribution platforms and it's a different thing. You got to get really good at, you know, you got to build your own website, got to get good at outside Amazon advertising, got to start learning about acquisition costs. So how much is it going to cost me to acquire a customer? Then you got to start learning about, you know, back-end selling. What other things can I sell this person other than just this product? I have to, in order to make this successful. So it's a much more complicated game, just to be clear. So the game we play is we spend time mining for gold on Amazon and we find it regularly. We even show examples on our YouTube channel of different products that we find interesting. We're even doing another experiment this year called 20 and 20, where we're starting 20 different products. We're going to track the growth of those with one of our members' accounts just to show behind the scenes what happens. So, you know, we're trying to be as transparent as we can and clear as we can. But the big factor here is time. You know, I've seen members come in with these kinds of items that we're talking about, similar methodology of finding them, of course. And yeah, they take off like crazy. I see other people, it takes time. I remember one product, right? It was like a stud finder. Not for finding good looking dudes, by the way. A stud finder, meaning it would find studs in the wall. And so basically this thing was something we bought from a wholesaler at the time, and it was not really listed. It was listed poorly on Amazon. So I got the listing improved quite a while ago now. Listing improved, made a lot of adjustments, got more images and all that, right? And it did nothing. Just sat there for ages in stock and FBA. And all of a sudden that thing started to rock. And I went back to the company because we had a lot of stock of it at the time. And I was like, oh, can we buy like 2,000 stud finders? And they were like, we don't do them anymore. I was like, what? It's a killer product now. And so that's the thing. Like it can just take you time. And so what are you looking at to you know, how do you get into the, use the algorithm to your benefit? And it's really a function of number one, getting traffic to your listing, which again, we use Amazon PPC. We obviously optimize our listing using the right keywords and all that. We've back-end optimization of keywords as well, very important. But like at the end of the day, if your research is wrong, none of what I just said matters. That's why people come to me are like, show me the way you do listings, because like you're talking about 60% conversions. And I'm like, if I show you that, you're going to tell me that my methodology is no good. And it's not like everybody else's methodology or whatever. And I'm going to be like, yes, because the first thing, the most important thing wasn't right. So for anybody listening today, you just got to know that like product research is a real process. And as Michael, you said to me off air too, like, you know, supplier choice and suppliers sourcing is another one. And it takes time to learn. But I've got members now, even Robert, like he's just, you know, my partner and super expert in research, and he's able to find 4 or 5 products in an hour now, which, you know, is ridiculous. And he doesn't always find them in an hour, but I've seen him do it in an hour, interesting products that we would move on. So again, I make no guarantees, as you know, Michael, I'm just as clear as I can. I've given a good lot of rules today, and I hope they were somewhat helpful. Everything we've talked about anyway.
Yeah, really helpful. I mean, this is the stuff that everybody in the world wants to know, very specific ways of doing product research, and it makes sense. And it's funny, like you were talking about in the last episode about putting yourself through, you know, new paces yourself, learning new models. And I'm currently going through a course on wholesale and about to go and try that. And some of it's incredibly familiar because it's Amazon, but some of it is really quite different. And I think everybody's got a different model, and it is important. When it's funny to, it's very important to experience being new to something because it reminds you of, oh God, yeah, I really do want the specifics actually. So it's very helpful. And I guess what you're saying is, I like the honesty that you have about what you're after is marketplace products. You're not doing brand building. That is an option, but it's a completely different thing. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you're going to do that, a lot of the time, the problems in life, I think, is very simple. When you think you're doing A, but you're actually doing B, then everything that applies to model A is different. And if you're doing model B, then you need to do completely different things. So brand building, as you say, can be very important. Some people I know use Amazon as their main sales channel, but it's still about the brand. And over time, they're going to reinvest in their Shopify site, which is being, you know, good. And I know some businesses like that, but equally I think it's very important to recognize that if what you're after is kind of boring everyday products, but you've chosen really well, like, you know, also just wacky stuff like moose's heads mounting thing, you know, it isn't a brand, it's a weird product. You can build a brand around that, but
yeah, exactly.
If you're clear about what it is you're doing, then you can go in with the right mentality, and it's about,
yeah, it's beautifully, everything you said, by the way, Michael, is beautifully stated. I have to say, you really picked that out really well, like that A and B thing. I love what you said there. It's so true, you know. But again, like, yeah, the moose's head mount product, for example, like, yeah, as you just said quite rightly, you can build a brand off that afterwards. But that's the beauty of it all, right? I did an interview with a lady, Katie Richardson, from a brand called Pudge, P-U-J. It's a really popular kids brand in the baby market. And she said to me, she's like, you know, your process you're talking about is actually really good because you're getting market validation before putting all this time and effort into building a brand. And now a kind of a disclaimer, or not, it's a caveat here, is I'm not saying we don't put a brand on our products. And we do. And we really have to get things like brand registry sorted, right? Because we have to be trademarked. And again, like, to get a trademark, you have to be in the market. You have to be trading. Like, that's how you get one. So you're trading in the market under a name that you've cleared, and then, you know, you apply for the trademark. They see that you've been trading with it for a period of time, and that's where you're going to get your trademark. Where you don't get your trademark is you're not even trading, and you're applying for something, you may or may not get it. So that's another kind of thing as well. Yes, we do build a brand, but we don't build a brand the way that, that it's known. We put a brand on our products, and typically we have what we call like a house brand name, meaning like it's one brand name that we choose. We get trademarked, and then we put all our products under that brand. And yes, I know the question will come: can we have different names, different brand names for different things? Yes, you can. But something for everybody to kind of rethink about as well is like, real high-end e-commerce is great and it's an awesome business model when you know what you're doing. But also like you have to understand like it comes with lots to learn. So my recommendation always is get yourself up and running a private label on Amazon, leveraging the power of Amazon, the global power. And something you said, Michael, I loved as well, I think it was in the break, get excited again, because it's really exciting. The fact you can trade in multiple countries selling weird and wonderful products on Amazon is great. So your goal then to win this game and how you begin to win the game is amass as many products as you possibly can in this business, make a small number of sales in different countries, make your profits, and then you can add in your brand, start scaling that. You now have learned something about business. You know how to calculate your profitability. You know what your import costs are going to be. You know what your duty rates are going to be. You know what your PVC costs are going to be. So you've got a much better understanding of business now. The big thing for me would have been if I had ran into trying to do e-commerce without any knowledge, I would have failed, because, you know, there's just a lot to consider and a lot to learn. Where something like this, there is a lot to learn. Yes, of course. But like Amazon simplify a lot of things. Again, just to resell everybody on why Amazon is good too. Number one, like you've got millions of customers. That's great. Which when we learn our research process, we can find products that they want, that we can improve, etc. Like we chatted about. Also, like Amazon do all your shipping via FBA in multiple countries, which is great. So you can do that. They obviously pick, pack, and ship the products on your behalf, which is great. So you don't have to do it every single day. They do the inbound customer services in multiple languages. So again, great. You don't have to learn Spanish or French. Cool. You know, there's that. Then there's other benefits, like whenever someone clicks into your listing on Amazon, Amazon retarget people on social platforms. So again, retargeting is one of the most profitable forms of advertising you can do. You've probably seen it before. You know, if you're on Facebook and you see something you saw on Amazon or you're on, they also include you in their newsletters that they send out to people who are looking at similar products, right? On from that, Amazon, their SEO, search engine optimization, is unbeatable. In many cases, because it's such a trustworthy site. They also bid on keywords on AdWords and Bing for these generic key phrases like plastic shoebox. It'd be very hard to bid on that if you aren't Amazon and need your own site. It's doable, but tricky. So again, like there's all these benefits that you get access to as an Amazon seller. And I think what's happened is like we've all forgotten these things because we've all got wound up in this overcomplicated, you know, make 100 grand in 30 days kind of BS. Whereas when we really break it down, massive opportunity here still will remain to be, but you gotta play the game. You gotta know the game you're playing. Like you said, is it game A or is it game B? And if it's game B, that's cool. But if it's game A, don't make it game A, B, or it's not going to be good.
Yeah, I like it. That's not going to make a great book title, but yeah, or maybe it would, but it's a bit mysterious. But you're absolutely right. I think it's in the end, it sounds a bit of a fancy way of putting it, but it's a strategy decision. I think a lot of people make strategy complicated, or maybe it's a very big word, but it is kind of simple. It's like, are we aiming to conquer the hill and then rush the enemy from up there? Or are we going to kind of do a guerrilla warfare from the woods? It's just basic. It's kind of very primitive type decisions, but they have to just be clear. I think for me, what it comes down to is clarity. And I think you've given us a lot of clarity about that. And also, as you said, you've got to remember what's good about Amazon. I mean, Amazon, we all end up with a love-hate relationship with it as Amazon sellers. And you're going to, if you haven't done it yet, believe me, you'll end up there. But, you know, sure, they treat third-party sellers badly. And yeah, they should be better. And maybe they will be if the antitrust legislation kicks in. Maybe they'll end up, maybe not. But the things they offer us are so hard to do away from Amazon, as you said, everything you just mentioned. The other thing I would say is just to flip it on its head. You try and getting even a few thousand people to your website, it's a sweat. You know, you try doing the shipping, you've done that yourself, you know the sweat of that. I haven't really done much of that, but customer service, retargeting, very expensive, beating them on SEO is impossible.
Customer service, I used to do it whenever Rob and I first started, you know, and we were a relatively big seller, but we weren't humongous, like weren't doing 20 million a year, right? We're doing like maybe nearly 2 million a year, as I mentioned. But before we switched to full FBA, like when I was just kind of finishing my apprenticeship at Rob, I can tell you, like, I answer customer support and I would answer, no joke, 150, 200 tickets a day easily. And almost all of them, I'm telling you, almost all of them, we'd won two customer support staff full time. I used to have to jump in and answer maybe another 150 sometimes around Christmas and stuff like that. But every ticket query was, what was it? It was this, where is my item? And here's the thing, like, if you're not Amazon, right? Alibaba call it e-packet shipping. We call it track shipping, right? Amazon call it track shipping. If you don't have the ability to send, if you're doing smaller items, meet all different kinds of items, couriered items are easy. You can see where it is with the tracking. Whereas if you're sending something smaller and it's not tracked, because sending a small tracked item, when we were doing our own fulfillment, it was just too expensive. It was you couldn't get a good rate on it. It's not possible. But Amazon can do it because they're shipping so much, like, so everything's tracked. So they can see and tell you where the item is. We couldn't tell you where it is. We're like, wait another 2 days and come back to us, because that's the only answer you can give. So, like, doing your own fulfillment, your own customer support, I've been there, and it is not a walk in the park. And again, I'm not saying e-commerce outside Amazon doesn't work. Of course it does. And there's many things you can do as an e-commerce merchant off Amazon that you can't do in Amazon. But I'm talking here about what we're showing people how to do. And that's what we're focused on today. You know, I mean, yeah. So hopefully it's all helpful anyway.
Again, it comes down to this game A or game B thing. If you're going to go off Amazon, before you badmouth it, just make sure you're really good at dealing with, you know, 150 customer service tickets a day and have an incredible way of tracking stuff. And quite often people will do, and again, this is another conversation, but people get obsessed with everything's on Amazon or off Amazon. It doesn't have to be either or. Amazon is unbelievable at fulfillment, to the extent that I know people like Anthony Lee back in the day, speaking to him, he said they tried all sorts of alternative fulfillment. They came back to FBA because you just couldn't beat it. Whereas, you know, you could sell stuff on a Shopify store fulfilled by Amazon. You can send Google traffic to Amazon, but your traffic sources could be Google or influencer marketing or Instagram. So in the end, you can mix and match. But again, it's just a question of, don't be pretentious about the fact that you're going to recreate what Amazon does in an e-commerce store over like a 1 year on the basis of a £2,000 internet course or something, because that ain't happening. It's just, they are amazing at what they do. Like it or loathe it, you have to deal with the reality that Amazon is just killing e-commerce. And if you can get incredible numbers of people to visit listings and get a 60% conversion rate in your Shopify store, then you should be going, basically taking Jeff Bezos's job, because is incredibly hard. I mean, these guys have built a genius business over 2.5 decades. That ain't going away overnight. So yeah, if you want to compete with them, at least you've got to be real about how good they are as well. So, but you know, the nice thing is you don't have to, you can mix and match, right? In my opinion, you don't have to be either or.
I will flip it very briefly before we finish up and just say, I mean, if you're selling something that's high end, the e-commerce, right? So it's like I interviewed a guy, a very interesting guy called Gary Neelan. You actually, he'd be great for this podcast as well. And Gary ran a very successful e-commerce website, but they were selling like kitchen cabinets and kitchen, equipment and stuff like that. Very high end, high priced. So like that wouldn't work as well on Amazon. And you might say, well, why not? And it will work, but it won't work as well. Because that's not what Amazon's kind of designed for, right? That's not the kind of customer Amazon wants. Like that kind of kitchen cabinetry, I don't know that's word. But anyway, it's like, you know, you're going to have virtual tours of the stuff. You're going to see it in situ. It's going to be a lot more marketing involved in something like that, because the price is so high and you can do videos, you can do all this kind of stuff that's going to make it work for you. And again, because the price is higher, the profit's higher, it's going to be easier to drive traffic to something like that. It's going to be more profitable. Whereas like we're talking about something that's, you know, you sell for $20. I mean, good luck. Like, but also if it is $20 and you're driving traffic, you better have a back end. You better. Because if you don't, forget it. And again, it can work. It does work. I've seen it work. But what really will work with e-commerce on your own sites is like, you know, more, I'm going to say kitschy, but more kind of like, not even novelty, but just kind of more interesting products, you know, more weird, not weird even. It's hard to describe, but like Dollar Shave Club, for example, you know, would that work on Amazon? Sure. Does it work better on their own platform because of their business model? Absolutely. So like you just, again, it's the strategy, like you said, it is that. But for anybody listening today, I don't think anybody here is looking to sell kitchen cabinets for $2,000 or $3,000. Like, we're here to sell simple products on Amazon, get a business up and running, get some proof of concept that, yeah, I can do this. Like, I can take a product from scratch, get it selling. I can do this. I feel better about myself then. This is something I can grow a little bit more of next couple of years. I can move to a brand when the time is right for me, if the time is right for me. And you go from there. So there you go.
Well, look, Stephen, we better start wrapping things up because I know you've got to go and take care of, you know, pretty much of an empire these days. 6,000 students in Marketplace Superheroes alone. That's pretty impressive. And I really like your groundedness and the reality of this is very healthy counterbalance to all the make money overnight stuff out there and certain people with their Ferraris on YouTube and that sort of thing, which just, as you said, gives internet marketing a bad name, and it doesn't have to have. Yeah. It is just a choice of how you do business. So if you want to learn more from Stephen, we've set up a link at amazingfba.com/super. I was just thinking about the easiest thing to remember, super. So S-U-P-E-R. If you can't spell super, you may have a problem we can't help you with. amazingfba.com/super. Just remind us what sort of help you guys offer. I know you've got quite a few free courses and things like that. What sort of things do you offer for free?
Yeah, so when you go over there, like you'll get access to just a free training that I put on, and it'll basically walk you through a lot of what we talked about today, and it really will break down a few big things. Something we call the Rule of Five, which is our framework for having small number of products in multiple countries, and what that can mean to you when you're selling on Amazon from a profit standpoint. I'll break down that research process for you. I'll show you products that you shouldn't be selling. Kinds of things you shouldn't be listening to, the kinds of products that are interesting. And then we will talk a little bit about, you know, why you should, you know, you won't want to warehouse things yourself, and just what Amazon can do for you. A lot of what we talked about here in a little bit of a different angle on it. So that's what you'll get there. And it's free. Check it out. See what you think. If you want to work with us, then, you know, there'll be an option there for you to do so. Obviously, we'd love to have people here who want to work with us, help you out as much as we can. Obviously, we know Michael has sent you over, so we'll take really good care of you. And I would just invite anybody, by the way, if you want to send me a message, the only place you can really do it is over on Instagram. I hope you don't mind me saying this, Michael, but Stephen J. Somers, P-H, the Stephen J, S-O-N-E-R-S. You can send me a DM over there and ask me a question. Anywhere else, I probably won't get it because I get a lot of questions these days. But, you know, feel free to, and let me know that you were listening to this podcast specifically, just so I know where you're coming from, and I'll help you as much as I possibly can.
Well, that's great. Thank you. So Instagram is the place to get you. That shows how on trend you are. I'm hardly ever on Instagram. My VA is constantly posting stuff on Instagram. I don't even know what it is. So maybe
I'm very small following there. I'm growing.
It's a demographic thing, maybe, that I'm more about PM on Facebook. But also, just to say that, folks, if you want to see, there's some very good details that we talked about today with the product selection process in particular. If you want to get the show notes, just go to amazingfba.com/blog. I know it's confusing, but the podcast is for the RSS feed. You don't want to read that. That's for computers. Just go to amazingfba.com and check out the blog where we do some pretty detailed show notes. I'm always typing away while my guests are talking. So, yes, we always want to provide that extra value. So Stephen, it's been really, really fun to talk to you. We'll definitely get you back on. I know, just to flag up some future things we're going to talk about that are very much within your wheelhouse, about multiple international marketplaces for UK sellers. We'll talk about EFN and multi-country inventory as well, and how US sellers can handle dealing with VAT and other issues that they've got to get their heads around selling in UK, Europe. So it's a date. If you'll come back, we'd love to have you. But in the meantime, just remains for me to say many, many thanks for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom.
Well, no, thanks for having me on. And I just want to say, I appreciate your time, because I know how much effort it is to do something like this and put it on, you know, you put your time into it. So thanks for having me on. I hope people enjoyed today. And yeah, I look forward to speaking to you in the future. I'd love to come back on, and we will make that happen, sir.
Thank you.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.